I mainly stick with ChatGPT. I like what I do, and I like writing. I like finding voices and new analogies. So I try and write my own stuff because it's what I enjoy. That's why I do it for a living. So I use prompts like that more to help me be stronger for like the work that matters the most.
Welcome everyone to Tech by Design, where the Richmond Technology Council takes you to the edge for trending tech and innovation here in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Nick Surface, CEO of RVA Tech, along with Alex Atanias, CEO of Shaco. Come join us.
All right, well, let's get the ball rolling, everyone. So this week, we're going to talk about a topic that is
We're recording already?
Oh, yeah, man. We're always recording.
Nice.
We come
Wait,
in here.
Wait, we're recording?
We're recording.
Am I on mute?
Everybody?
We're doing it.
Everybody, we're recording. Everyone's got their cans on. Okay. We're good.
Doing it live.
We're all set. So today, we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart and near and dear to Richmond. We're going to dive into creativity and how it overlaps with the tech scene and the role AI plays. So we are joined today by Justin Bajan, who's the co-founder of Familiar Creatures here in Richmond. Thank you, Justin, for coming in, hanging out with us, spending some time with the gang.
Happy to be here.
So we wanted to talk today and kind of get your thoughts just from the ad perspective of what it means to have good creative, what it means to create ads and meaningful experiences and brands in an AI-powered world. I wanted to start by just talking about Steven Sondberg had, Alex had sent this around to all of us, comments that he had made about AI and that it can help creative people, but it can't replace us because it's never had a hangover. Lucky for it. It's never been in love. It's never experienced loss. I just kind of, Justin, wanted to get your thoughts on what you think about that.
Oh, wait. Hold up. We got to get an intro on the name. I mean, before we like, we have to set the presence of like Familiar Creatures. What do you guys do? Where did the name come from? And then we'll go into getting drunk and falling in love.
Unless that plays into the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, we read the Steven Soderberg article, went back in time, and then we came up with our name.
With AI.
With AI.
Time machines.
2018's version of AI, which was just texting my friend Dustin. Familiar Creatures, we're an advertising agency. We're right here in Richmond. Our biggest clients are Duke's Mayonnaise and Crunch Fitness. And we have several other clients on our roster.
That's quite the range there.
Well, I mean, you need to go work out after you eat.
That's true. A cyclical thing, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I love it.
It's a good business strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we got Duke's first, and then we realized we need to work this off, so then we got Crunch after that. Yeah. Yeah, the name, there's a few different origin stories. We wanted to make sure that it sounded interesting, which sounds so basic and table stakes, but a lot of agencies in my lifetime are either just the last name of one white guy, you know, or maybe four last names of all white guys, or they have some, they're trying to be cool, and then it just doesn't have a timelessness to it. And we wanted a name that invited you in and made you ask the question, how'd you come up with that name? I don't think a lot of people ask ad agencies, how'd you come up with that name? And then we sort of worked into it. Well, we're familiar because, you know, we're from the advertising industry. We're creatures, which means we're not quite what you're used to. That's what we've said in the past, and it stuck in a certain way. It was on our 1.0 of our website, and that's the story.
So then, Justin, in your experience and in the work that you all do over there, what makes good creative for you guys in the ad space?
Good creative is something that provokes a reaction, first of all. So it gets you to pay attention. And then it gains purchase in your brain. It sticks in your frontal lobe and you just cannot stop thinking about it. So, you know, if you think about the Budweiser frogs, you know, or if you think about, you know, Real Men of Genius, another Budweiser example. See, beer advertising used to be good. 1984 for Apple. These are things that you remember just like you remember a movie or a show. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to buy that thing, but there's a greater likelihood you're going to buy that thing because it's living inside your head. So that's what we try to do. We try to create indelible impressions, and it's not easy. It takes a combination of just being there and having done it many times, but also just diving into what makes us individuals and striving to be original. Yeah, all those things come into play. I think people would have a million different answers for that question. Somebody probably would say, good creative is creative that makes people buy stuff. And I disagree, because I think you can get anyone to buy anything if you have enough money to show them that thing all the time, yes. You know? Like head on, applied directly to the forehead. Was that good? You know? I don't know. People quoted it. They did it in Saturday Night Live and stuff like that, but it wasn't, people laughed about it, you know? I don't even remember what that product was.
Justin, do you find that good creative is more emotional strategy, business strategy, or entertainment? What prong is like more of the spearhead for you when you guys are starting to develop creativity?
You have to solve a business problem. So there are things that we saw in the Super Bowl, you know, and I watched them in real time, and then I watched them again, and then I watched them again because I was on a panel for the Richmond Ad Club. I noticed a lot. You couldn't tell what the business problem was. And so while the person in the chair in front of their nachos doesn't really maybe think that way, if it's not doing that, then there's no reason for you to buy it. It could just be entertaining, and that's it. And there were a lot of them that I couldn't tell. You probably forgot who it was for. And yep. That's a big fail. There were other ones where the brand was central to the story that made the brand heroic and infectious. And, you know, that's what I'm biased towards. So it's a combination of solving the problem and doing it in an entertaining way. But entertainment doesn't have to be hilarious. It can be something that provokes, you know, more thought-felt and heartfelt emotions, you know.
Alex, so many questions.
So many. I already have four.
I thought you might.
Yeah, I'm like, where does authenticity fall into good creative?
Yeah.
Like, how does that play into it? Does it even play a role?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the intersection or the Venn diagram middle as Gen Z starts to have more buying power, because they have been fighting that crusade with everybody. If you say one thing, you eventually will get doxxed, you know, Gen Z will come after you. And so brands these days have to be more and more true and honest about who they are. I think it creates more opportunities because we don't have to, I don't know how to say it in a business sense, but there can be some lying that goes on. And I've always run away from that. I try to, even if I don't particularly love the product, like it's pizza and pizza makes you fat, you know, you try to find something that's true about it. Okay, it's a family meal, you know. But there's some things that, you know, give me the ick, you know, to borrow a modern parlance. So I think authenticity is going to be even more paramount.
I just learned two new words, doxed and ick.
You know doxed? No. What is doxed? Is that
it's like cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying, yeah. Okay. Right?
We're going to have a glossary at the end of each episode.
This is, am I correct?
I'm a dog with these new phrases. Yeah. Yep.
Icked. I got icked and doxed today.
Wow.
Hopefully right? I didn't do either one to you. Well,
have you all heard the phrase, don't ick my yum or something like
don't
that?
Don't yuck my yum.
Don't yuck my yum.
Yeah, we're podcasting here.
Don't yuck my yum. Yeah.
We're a pretty hip crew.
So on a serious note there, coming back to the second question, it's just, so we're talking about authenticity, right? And doxing aside, but how does good creative reinforce brand, like a brand heritage, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of the things that I'm curious about, just from a selfish perspective, I work in tech, obviously we work in creative as well. But for us, good creative is meant to reinforce a brand heritage, mm-hmm. because we're basically pushing brands into this digital world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How does that work in the ad space and the creative space?
Can you define brand heritage? Do you mean like equity, brand equity?
Or
you mean really like who that brand
who
is?
Who the brand, like where, what they were found, like yeah. What was the foundational element of that brand?
Yeah, I mean, you're speaking my language, and you're basically, you know, going back to what I was talking about with the Super Bowl. I think the ones where it was all about the brand, and you know, and the greatest, you know, ad makers of all time have always done that. Yeah. You know, and I think that no matter what we do, as we go into AI, as we go into generative stuff, and then you know, thinking about even like influencers and TikTok and whatnot. If it's not brand forward, it's going to be about something else, and people will only talk about that something else, and that thing will fade away. Brands last a very long time. You know, Levi's has been around since the 1800s. People no Levi's. You know, you cannot manufacture equity. It takes time. And if you run away from it and you try to chase other things, then you'll start to look like an also-ran. You'll start to look like everybody else. And there's no wonder why many brands like Pizza Hut, Burger King, I'm blanking on a few others, have gone back to their branding from like the 60s or 70s when TV was paramount. There were only like three or four channels in terms of what you can watch. There's only three or four channels in terms of information you could receive.
I mean, that holds true today because the rest is just garbage, right?
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's so interesting that they went back to what they used to look like because that's when they were at their strongest, you know? And I don't think it's about nostalgia. I think it's about them realizing, man, maybe we tried too many things.
Well, and so then when we think about brand authenticity and like creating that voice and that style and that imagery that's like specific to your brand, how can AI help? Or I feel like I could see a lot of different ways where AI could hinder creating that like personalization and that customization. Like, what does everyone think about that?
Man, yeah. I've been thinking about the different metaphors for AI, you know, that it's a tool. I'm a big underground and sometimes mainstream hip hop fan. And the sampler, you know, came into play in the mid 80s. And eventually it became about, well, what are you using? Are you using the SP1200? Are you using the MPC? The listener doesn't know. It's all about how that producer freaked it. So with AI, I think it's bad if you can tell it's AI. Mm-hmm. Then you're doing a bad job. You're not telling a good story because I was looking at all that Sora stuff that came out last week. I don't know what it is within us. I haven't studied enough about anthropology and maybe psychology, but the human eye knows when there's a human there and if that is a human. I was having more trouble knowing, is that really an ant or is that really like a fuzzy little, you know, bunny or something like that? But I knew those weren't humans when I watched that. I don't think I'm the only one. And that's going to be the interesting challenge for AI. It's always had a challenge with hands, which I find interesting, and fingers. And it has not figured out how to do groups of people without some people going away or like being subsumed by somebody else. There's something interesting that's hindering that. I don't know what they're saying about why, but also I just think that human beings will, if they're using their mind, which there will be some things that AI can just do for us that we don't need to have to do anymore. You know, just like, you know, the typewriter brought the idea of deleting a letter, you know, that was new and helped people write quicker. AI will do that too. And I haven't thought much about like what it will completely replace, but it will replace the stuff that was time intensive and didn't really add up to anything. But I'm not sure it's going to, like going back to Soderbergh, I'm not sure it's going to replace incredible storytelling. It's not going to make Lady Bird. It's not going to make whatever's nominated for an Oscar this year. But it might be able to make a Madea movie or something, you know?
So I think you're
Pauly Shore movie.
You're not off, right? So there's just a couple concepts there, and I'll kind of try to bring them all together. But there's something called the Uncanny Valley. Have you heard of this theory?
No.
So it's essentially the valley where robots or animations have characteristics that make them look almost human, but they're off to a certain degree in such a way that makes them feel creepy or eerie, right? And I think, can't remember who coined it, but Google speaks about this. And when they first introduced robotics, if you remember like the 80s, I think, or like 90s, this was obviously pre-Google, they were trying to make them human-like. Mm-hmm. And then they basically backed them off completely and made them look robotic. And that is because that human element made them look very creepy. Right. So tying that together with kind of like the Sottenberg article, it's just like, OK, so now you have this. If you make them look too human, they look a little creepy. But at the same time, they don't experience that relationship. And we'll come back to your question, Lauren. They don't have love. They don't have, like, AI hasn't gotten drunk, woken up and regretted the night.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. AI is basically referencing 1,000 stories of that happening to somebody else or some other people. Right. And so how do you bring all that together to, as an artist, how do you create good creative? And maybe, Lauren, I'll go back to your question, like the Sottenberg article, but.
Well, can we just note that to me, it seems that the biggest enemy of creativity is the blank page and writer's block or, you know, artist's block, in that you need inputs to create that spark of creativity, that spark of a good idea. And whether it's a conference or an experience or something that you're inputting into your system that gives you that spark, AI could be that type of input where you start to see some different formations and some different elements, colors, images, layouts that you've never seen before, and it makes you, through your own lens, have a spark of an idea that could then, you know, lead to great creative.
I agree that it's stimulus. I mean, watching the Sora the Sora videos last week, the ones that they were proud of and the ones that they were, you know, admitting that they were getting off. Yeah, I could have written a poem, a book, a movie, a show about what I was taking in, you know, just because you're seeing visual stimulus entering your brain, you know? So I do agree with that. The situation of creating the prompt to get stimulated is that's wacky to me. I don't know how to, that's like, how do you make yourself motivated? You know, like you have to be motivated. And so, but the passive experience of going to that, just like going to a museum, just like watching a show, I think it works the same way for sure.
Well, and I think it was the article that Alex had sent where they were referencing, like, write a plot for a Black Mirror episode.
Mm.
And it was like a way to almost play devil's advocate of being able to, like, see, like, okay, like, if this is what, like, ChatGPT, like, thinks, like, how can I use that to do, like, the opposite almost, to come up with something that's more authentic to me than what the computer could spit out, and kind of use that as a tool to create more of a personalized experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, too, I enjoy, maybe it's Schadenfreude, errors. I like mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I like going to that conference and the microphone doesn't work. I don't know why. It just tells me that, like, reality is occurring and nothing can, if it's, when you break the script, that's where, like, there's an edge, there's a tension. And same thing with AI. I love the mistakes it makes. I was just reading this morning, ChatGPT just going bonkers. It started speaking Spanglish to people. And then they said to it, like, hey, you're, like, mixing up, like, Spanish and English. And it apologized, and then it started doing it again. And then people started doing their screenshots of all the time it like, screwed up with them. And this is ChatGPT-4, and I think they've had a patch now or something like that. But it was delicious for me just to see it effing up. And the same thing with Sora. Those mess-ups are just, I watch them on loop, like the one where they dig out and excavate a plastic chair. Did you guys see that?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. It's mesmerizing.
So you're like, what's his face? Adam Sandler, and what was that, like, what is it, Big Daddy or something? Like, where they basically throw the sticks on the floor when, like, the kid's, like, skating, and you just laugh at it. It's like,
This is giving me flashbacks to that show Westworld. It's almost a manifestation of the tech AI into an actual human being that does sometimes glitch and sometimes do things you don't want it to do.
Oh, yeah.
But in some ways can get, have a hangover and can fall in love and can have all those human emotions. So that's, you know, I guess the next evolution, which is a little freaky, but.
So then what's the flip side of all of this, right? Like, there's ways that it can, that it can't be as good, but you mentioned, like, there are ways that, like, we could potentially use it in a creative industry to streamline processes or to help us out.
Yeah. I think that, I'm thinking there's some transferability beyond advertising. I'm assuming Hollywood. There are ways that you have to demonstrate your idea before you've made the idea. And it's hard, you know, like, to make a movie, you have to tell people about the idea of your movie. And you can do it just by talking to a high-powered producer at some Hollywood bar, as they show me in movies and shows. I don't know how often it happens. But there's going to be a moment of pitching it. And what tools do you need to make that pitch efficacious and make people pay attention? I think AI can be used on the generative visual side to show someone, you know, lighting, maybe. This is the kind of lighting I was thinking of. You know, this was the kind of, like, angles I was thinking of. It won't make it into the final product. You know, it's like when George Lucas made Star Wars, the first one, he wanted to show a rough cut to his friends. So his friends happened to be Steven Spielberg, a few other high-powered directors and stuff, and maybe Martin Scorsese, but he didn't have the special effects done yet. So he just cut in videos from World War II, you know, videos of planes doing, you know, dives and stuff like that. And he's like, then this, the TIE fighter will do that. They don't remember what the names of things are. The X-Wing will do this. And it would just be in the middle of his rough cut. But they understood, like, okay, I see what you're going for, you know. And now you can just do that. You know, if you were in that in-between state, AI could help you get to that next place. But it won't. So I like it. I like thinking of it as a tool, just like anything can be a tool. The painter needs paint. The painter needs a paintbrush. And in advertising, you know, taking it out of movies, making the stakes a little bit lower, we have to show our ideas to ourselves and to clients, you know, who might not have aren't going on the imaginary journey that we're going on in our heads. They need to see something. So yeah. You can totally use it for that.
As tech evolves, it doesn't mean creativity goes away or gets replaced. Yeah, I love what you said about the tool or having it be another part of your palette. You know, when Microsoft Paint came out, you know, it wasn't the end of art, you know, and then, you know, obviously we have Adobe Illustrator and all these other fancy things now. And they enhance what we can actually produce and create. And I might say even the art's elevated now to a higher degree. It's not only more capable, but it's also more efficient. So you could probably get to where you want to go faster, which gives you more time to think or iterate or process and create even more.
So, actually, on that note, one of the things that I have so many questions. I think for you and Lauren, right? So you guys are basically in this space of producing content for people to consume. I think Nick and I are, and Claire are as well. But
I'm more experiential, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Experiential creator.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm like, where are you going with this one? Yeah, of course. But how do you guys see like that human AI interface like supporting the stuff that you produce? And I don't know if it's you or Lauren answering that, like from a copy perspective or from a creative perspective. And Nick, I mean, obviously, like, would love your opinion on from an experiential perspective.
For me, it helps. I use more tools like that to help me strengthen my writing for my clients. So it's an opportunity to be like, give me a creative prompt that I would have to be persuasive about X, Y, and Z. And it just gives me a chance to kind of like flex my muscles in a problem that I didn't come up with. So I'm more blank when I get started on it. So I'm not setting myself up for a game that I can win. If I'm like designing something, right, I'll design something and I'll say, you design something similar, like in the same prompt, and see like how I was close, how I was different, what elements of it do I like versus what I made. It's kind of just a way to like strengthen my own skill set to make me better at what I do.
Are you a ChatGPT purist, meaning like you go straight to chat, or are you using any specific writing AI tools?
I mainly stick with ChatGPT. I like what I do, and I like writing. I like finding voices and new analogies. So I try and write my own stuff because it's what I enjoy. That's why I do it for a living. So I use prompts like that more to help me be stronger for like the work that matters the most.
Yeah, I mean, I normally go onto ChatGPT and say, please have grammatical errors and speak a little Spanglish so people know. How do you prompt it? Like, do you have any special techniques on prompting or no?
No, I think I need to learn a lot more about that. Like, I struggle with, like, I can think in Google prompts. You know, I'm really good at being like, oh, okay, like, how would I tell Google that I need to like find a Christmas present, but I haven't figured out how to tell like Etsy that I'm looking for a baby shower gift for under $40. Like, sorry to my cousin, but you know, I'm working on that still.
Okay.
Yeah. Now that I'm more working on the business versus in create as much as I used to, you know, I'm more like the lifeguard that comes in when someone's metaphorically drowning and I save them with words. And those words are quickly generated because I've been working for 15 or 17 years. I've lost track. I don't know how my creatives are using it. You know, I think on the art direction side, on the design side, they're using Midjourney, they're using DALL-E and stuff to generate comps. How do you describe a comp? The in-between state of the idea becoming real.
Do you find that it's faster to do that? Like, are you guys turning more on the client's request or as a client needs?
Yes. Well, it just depends on what the... sometimes ideas are hard to just bring to life, you know, and it could take you hours. And, you know, we did some stuff last year for one of our clients, and one of the designers mostly used DALL-E, and we enjoyed that because it basically was a quicker way to show what they were doing, and I liked the efficiency of them not wasting their hours. Because in advertising, something can die in a minute. I could just be like, I don't like it. Nah, doesn't speak to me. And they actually spent 1 minute doing that in-between state versus 10 hours like they would have before. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Yeah, it is faster and more on the visual side. I don't know about the writing side right now.
It's hard on the writing side. Like, Alex, you and I have talked about this. Like, you can still tell when it's not written. Oh, like, yeah. You know that it's not what it should be. And that's why I think it's better as kind of a devil's advocate.
Even when writing. I throw in like the intentional like spelling mistake, you could tell.
I'm concerned if you're like asking ChatGPT to toss in a couple spelling errors. That would be concerning.
Lauren, I have some hopes and dreams on the experiential side.
Yeah.
I would like to relay as well. And I think it's a little bit more front and center for me now as we try to position Richmond as tech's most creative city. How do we elevate our events beyond what a typical conference is? And I actually have two kind of wish list items, one that's feasible, one that's probably out in the distance. But the first is just having a real-time auto-illustrated thing happening of when a speaker is presenting, you see on a screen an illustration happening of what they're speaking about. And there are artists that actually do this in real-time at conferences, but it would be cool if it was AI-generated and if AI just created an image or graphic or a thing that encapsulated all the points and highlights of the talk as it was happening. And then you could download that after. It lives on the website. It's a replica or a remnant of the experience. The other thing is we have all these speakers. A lot of times, you know, they're keynote speakers that you see on stage. You see them for 45 minutes. I'd love to have an AI-generated Q&A afterward where you have a hologram and you have, you know, an Q&A one-on-one with that person for 5 minutes. It's all recorded, and then that person gets it afterwards. So they see all the conversations they had with people that they weren't actually at. But I think that would be fascinating product to have at an event where you're actually able to talk with a speaker in their AI-generated form. So if we could just work on that.
I love it.
Oh, there's some ideas.
Get right on that.
So, there's so many ideas. I would love to talk about that.
Next episode.
So I think from my perspective, one of the things that excites me, and one of the reasons I think we're going into this topic is from a customer. So at Shaka, we build apps for customers and we build apps for employees, right? But from a customer facing perspective, our main job is to reinforce the storytelling that is created by the agency or by the company, right? And so what I mean by that is there's a brand heritage, there's advertising that goes into it that attracts people. And when we build apps or when we build websites or when we build experiences, we're simply reinforcing that story, right? Like that brand. And what scares me is if we have weak creative or weak storytelling, then we're reinforcing a wrong concept mm-hmm. and we're never gonna get traction. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm like, I'm just picking at this like AI concept, because if I hear too many people using it, I think what Nick just said about essentially using AI to reinforce a story that has been told, like that's really cool, right? Like you're reinforcing a conversation that's been shared. If you're using AI to reinforce copy that's already been written, like that's really, really cool. But if you're using it to generate the story, now that's when I'm like, oh my gosh, like we can't build digital experiences on top of a story that's not authentic.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm excited.
Yeah, and I think that if it becomes your sole means of inspiration or how you make stuff, then we're gonna go to a very sad place.
Yeah.
You know, we all have to make some kind of a pact that we won't submit to it with the, you know, hands on top of our head like the football players when they're losing at the end of the game. You know, it's called the surrender cobra. But and commit to being humans. I think that the proliferation of Zoom and all the video platforms in 2018, 2019, 2017 then was accelerated by the pandemic, and the pandemic brought this other mindset of not trusting people, and it increased the amount of desensitization. I can't say the word.
Desensitization?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
The glossary keeps growing this episode.
Of just like just being with people, just like and respecting that people have different opinions and stuff. So that's a whole nother thing, the dehumanization of humanity that AI can accelerate, which is scary for me a little bit, because I like having conversations. I like, you know, like, oh, that person's got like an interesting cologne or whatever, or like they ate a donut today. I can certainly tell. That's more interesting than just always being on a screen and then eventually just not even having the people and you have some AI avatar that does everything for you. I don't know what happens, you know, like, sounds gross. You know?
Is that your new campaign for Crunch? You ate a donut today. I could certainly tell. Come to Crunch.
The AI knows you ate a donut today.
A donut made of mayo. We'll do a cross.
So you know what's really cool? So just a little, and Lauren, this is just my last question, but actually I have two more questions, but I've been talking to a lot of people about the Vision Pro, and I was listening to an All In podcast, and I love All In, but one of the guys in the podcast was saying, imagine essentially putting the Vision Pro on and watching television with your family. I mean, you are essentially cut off from what makes us human, yeah. right? And you're kind of like in this little like black like box. Yeah, the screen might be awesome and the experience, but you're doing it alone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I love the tech. I work in tech. I've been doing tech for 20 years, but I hope we don't get to a point where essentially we box ourselves away from what makes us human.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have to get used to, you know, we don't take the subway in Richmond because there isn't one, but people on public transportation just all having them on their face,
yeah.
you know, and then going to driving by a park and people having them on their face and not really seeing what's around them. I don't know. Maybe they won't actually go to the park. They'll just stay in their room, to your point.
Kind of like when people go to the park and just look down at their phones.
I mean, yeah. I think that's what started it. You know, that the phone pulling focus away from looking around is, you know, that brought that idea, I think. You know, we had stuff before the Vision Pro. You know, we had Oculus Rift and stuff. And it was always interesting when those guys would come to, like, the Martin Agency and do a demo, and you'd always be like, but how can we get millions of people to do this? Like, you have to like, Apple actually brought their architecture and their beautiful design, and that gives it the attraction, because prior to that, you're just like, you just put a thing on your head and you just have to do it yourself to know it's cool. Like, you have to take people's word for it. It's interesting. The trial piece of it is so weird, but I think with Apple, they're going to find a way to get more people to adapt it, you know. Yeah.
Alex, you said you had one last question.
Oh, I mean, this is just like a kind of a closing comment, but what stayed in your frontal lobe after the Super Bowl?
The first thing, right when you said that, like the thing that popped was there's a Reese's commercial where they're introducing the new caramel Reese's.
Oh, that was a good one.
That was funny.
So like that one, no celebrities. It's just 30 seconds. It's a simple premise.
But I still have my old Reese's.
Yes. And it goes through the thought process anybody would have if they got that information. Are you replacing Reese's? No. You know, original? No, we're not doing that. Oh, okay, good. You know? And it's just like, they just say yes and no, really, in a few other words. Like, it's just so simple. So many of them go on such a journey, you're like, I don't know what was going on. You know, if you weren't hooked from the beginning, it just keeps going. And that one is just such a simple premise. There's a few others. I think it was... Now that I've analyzed it way too much, I think it was one of the better ones, even though nobody says that. It's cool to say everything sucks. It was actually one of the better showings, that Super Bowl, because there were more entertaining things. I will give people credit. There were a lot of safe ideas, and there were a lot of influencers whose names I did not know or knew that they were important, that I got checked on by Gen Z and younger millennials. But, you know, that's more learning I need to do, I guess, maybe.
So my wife and I were eating Reese's in Halloween this year.
Yeah.
And I took a bite and I'm like, the ingredients changed. Oh, and so, yes, instantly. And my wife and I had a long debate. And eventually, like, we found out that the ingredients did change. They changed the ingredients. And I was like, oh my gosh. When I saw that commercial, my wife looked at me and she's like, oh, you are one of those people that would ask that question.
I love that.
Any other last thoughts before we wrap up?
I'd love to get Justin's take on the creative scene here in Richmond. You know, we have really been trying to promote Richmond's creative community, not just in tech, but as a whole. And I'd love to get your state of the city in terms of where we're at creatively and where you think we can go.
I think that we're at a... strong level. I don't know how you measure it. I think that muralism has become a thing in Richmond over the last, you know, 9 years or something like that, 8 years, and I don't think that's going away. Self-expression through starting businesses, you know, some might die and some come out. I just read this morning about it. This is the fourth mobile bar that's been introduced. I forget the name of it, but I was like, I didn't know there were three others. But that's interesting to me, you know. I think there's enough room and space here for people to keep thinking of stuff. And it's not a fixed place. Like, some places have vibes, you know. The financial district of Boston, I just made that up. You know, I've been there many times. Like, only a financial bro would want to be there. And only a financial bro would start a company or work there. But, like, here, we're not that provincial. We have a lot of different areas, you know, bubbling and burbling from Manchester to Scott's Addition to the Arts District where we are here now. So I think in the general sense that is increasing the idea of being creative outside in the world. And then I think advertising, fickle, it follows the market, and the market's had been volatile since, I don't know when, ever. But in the last 5 years, since the stimulus package and the pandemic and all that stuff, it's advertising has beefed up and then had to lay people off and stuff. But I think also, you know, there's super interesting thing coming out of the agencies that are here.
If you had to pick one company in Richmond, and you don't, I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, just to be clear. If you had to pick one company that you could like bring your creative talents to here in Richmond, which one would it be and why?
I am super interested in whatever is going on in that CoStar building.
Oh, that's a good one.
They seem to be taking over and not really asking if it's okay to do that. And they had so many commercials in the Super Bowl. So they have a lot of ambition. I love that they're here. And so I would love a conversation. I know some people there. I just haven't really broached that topic yet. But I think there's something interesting there. And also, I don't know about selfishly, but personally, I want to see homes, more homes and less, you know, only like apartments. I want to see people being able to buy homes, you know, especially the middle class, lower middle class. Millennials and older Gen Z, I would love homes to get like to be cool. So, you know, they have homes.com. They also have apartments.com.
Yeah, they also have LoopNet, which is what I think commercial real estate. Commercial.
Yeah.
But Justin, you're right. They're doubling down on creativity, whereas their competitor necessarily isn't, or two of their competitors are not. And even just the implementation of Jeff Goldblum about 5 or 7 years ago in their ad, you know, mix was really creative, and they're definitely taking a different tact. So I appreciate you highlighting a company like that here in Richmond.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, unless there's any other thoughts, we'll thank Justin for joining us. And next time we're gonna dive in kind of on the mural topic, art and technology in Richmond and how tech can reshape the art scene. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.